Blog Talk Radio.
Darn right it is.
There is a sixth dimension beyond that which is known to men. It is a dimension as immense as the sky and as perpetual as eternity. It is the middle ground between illumination and darkness, between knowledge and ignorance. It lies between the depths of man's horror and the apex of his learning. This is a dimension of fantasy. It is an area which we call the Eerie Zone.
Oh, it was a long way coming, but we got in the door. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm so sad. No Dave, but I'm so glad because I'm not alone. I'm Dale K from Spook Show, here along with the lovely and delightful.
This is CW, that saying that Dave can never be replaced. But we'll keep trying. No, sorry, Dave. Just here to make sure Dale doesn't do this all by his lonesome.
She means doesn't mess it up. So, you got your hands
that
full.
Too.
You got your hands full.
Miss you, Dave.
Yep, so you're trapped with me and CW as we present yet another fine tale. One of my favorites is, of course, CDS Radio Mystery Theater.
Ah, yes, indeedy. With the legendary orations of Mr. E. G. Marshall.
Is he cool or what? I mean, he brings a flavor to this show that is just unparalleled. When you think of all the great radio hosts, you know, with these anthology-type shows, E.G. Marshall's got to be in the top three.
Absolutely. He has just a wonderful savoir-faire, that joie de vivre that just tingles up your spine. But at the same time, he introduces you to danger. But you want more. You shouldn't, but you want more.
Yes, he has that arc de triomphe that certain Jenny C. Beer thing, I don't know.
That escargot.
That's it, escargots. And lots of them. E.G. Marshall, a great radio host, presenting another CBS Radio Mystery Theater, another trapped story. This one is called One of the Missing. Stars Christopher Tabori, Jennifer Harmon, Arnold Moss, and Mason Adams. And by the way, Arnold and Stella Moss wrote this bugger.
Wow, I am intrigued.
Yep. Adapted from an Ambrose Bierce story, as Dave alluded to last night, a Civil War scout comes across an enemy platoon. Before he can squeeze off a shot, well, I don't think we should ruin it for you.
No, without further ado.
Yeah. And since I got no one to punt to, this one ran for the very first time on New Year's Day. That's right, January 1st of 1970. What? Yes, January 1st of 1976.
In the air, everywhere, bright and beautiful music. KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents Come In. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. In Shakespeare's play, Hamlet asks the question, to be or not to be. For hundreds of years, thinking men have tried to define precisely what we mean by those words, to be or not to be. Because there are times when the line between being and not being, the distinction between what some of us call life and death, is such a thin line that that it is difficult to say whether at some particular point a human being actually is or is not.
Why did you throw your life away, Jerry?
I did no such thing.
You were young, handsome, intelligent, a good father, a good husband. But no more. No more. Now you're a hero. A dead hero.
No, I don't believe you, Marion.
You don't want to believe me. Open your eyes. Wide. If you can. Now. Tell me what you see.
Nothing. Everything's black. I see nothing.
Then admit it, Jerry.
Admit what?
The simple fact that you are dead. The fact that you are buried. The fact that I am up here, your widow, kneeling now in sorrow at your grave.
Our mystery drama, One of the Missing, was especially adapted from the Ambrose Bierce classic For the Mystery Theater by Stella and Arnold Moss. It stars Christopher Tabori. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Buick's 1976 Century Regal is the most luxurious midsize car Buick builds. But it's also got a practical side. In fact, it makes a concession to practicality that no other American midsize car does. It comes with a V6 engine and a Buick V6 at that. Regal, it's got the spirit.
A helping hand now can help prevent a handout in the future. How? Hundreds of American Indian children become grade school dropouts simply because their families can't afford to buy them a pair of shoes, a warm coat, a dress or shirt, or eyeglasses. People always say how good the American Indians are with their hands. Give them a chance to show what they can do with their minds. Send your contribution to Futures for Children, Box 14204, Albuquerque, 87109.
It's an insufferably hot day near the end of June. The year is 1864. The place, northern Georgia, in the shadow of an 1,800-foot elevation called Kennesaw Mountain. The Confederate Army has stopped here in retreat from the advancing troops of the Union General William Tecumseh Sherman. In his tent, a Union captain speaks.
Private Searing?
Sir.
And you are Private Daniel Ransom?
Yes, sir, I am.
You know our position, Searing?
Well, I'm not sure, sir, but there's been talk in the ranks that we're getting close to Atlanta.
Not more than 20 miles.
Yes, sir.
You both know what the fall of Atlanta will mean to us, Ransom?
I think I do, sir. It could mean the end of the war.
We've been ordered to advance upon the enemy, leave him no quarter, no time to rest or to reassemble his troops. General McPherson is a cautious man.
We know that, sir.
He's not content to obey an order blindly without knowing exactly and specifically what's in front of him. He wants the most complete, the most detailed intelligence possible, and I've been ordered to get it. That's where you two soldiers come in.
Yes, sir.
We believe the enemy to be in a strong position. You are to pass our own picket lines, travel through the forest, and get as near to the enemy's lines as you possibly can.
And learn all that we can. Is that correct, sir?
Exactly, Searing. Oh, one last word. The outcome of this long, bloody war may well depend on our success or failure in taking Atlanta.
We understand that, sir. When do we start?
Immediately. If you accomplish this mission this day, the 30th day of June, 1864, may well go down as one of the most important dates in the history of our country. Good luck to you both.
In no time at all, Ransom and I were creeping stealthily forward on our hands and knees, past our own men in blue on picket duty, lying in groups of two and four behind little banks of red earth. Dan, it's got so quiet and peaceful.
All of a sudden, Jerry. How do you explain it?
Got no idea.
How much further do you figure we have to go?
No way of telling yet. Why?
I don't know. Maybe I'm a little afraid. I don't think I'm quite ready to die. Not just yet.
Oh, now, you've never been afraid of anything in your whole life. Any more than I have.
Yeah, but this is different. Why is it all so quiet?
Just keep your eyes and ears open. Look for everything. Listen for everything. And take your time.
Yeah. It's slow going.
Oh, we'll get there. Hey, wait a minute. Flatten yourself down. Low as you can get. And don't move.
What is it? What do you see? What do you hear?
Take a look through that narrow opening in the bushes. And you tell me. Tell me what you see, Dan.
A little mound of yellow clay. Not more than 10 feet from here.
You know what it is, don't you?
Of course. It's one of their rifle pits.
Where are the men?
Be careful, Jerry.
Don't worry.
Jerry, what are you doing?
Look over there, Dan. Two boys in gray, sitting with their backs, leaning against that sycamore tree.
What do we do?
We'll capture them, Dan. You and I capture them.
You're fast asleep.
The captain never counted on this. Information from two prisoners of war. You cover the one on the left. I'll cover the other one.
All right.
Oh, Johnny Reb. The war is going to be over for you.
On your feet. Hands over your head.
They don't hear you.
Get up off your bottoms before I...
What is it?
They're not asleep, Dan. They're dead. Come on, let's get moving.
Hey, you'll get your head blown off. Keep down. There may be some live ones about.
Are you coming? Dan. Hey, Dan, look at this rifle pit. Nobody. There's been nobody in this pit for the last couple of hours. But same's true for that pit over here. And this one. No, Dan. It's just the two of us.
Where do you suppose they've gone?
I'm not sure. But I tell you one thing. We're damn well gonna find out. We pushed across the line of abandoned rifle pits, running from one cover to another in the open forest, looking into every conceivable hiding place to discover any possible stragglers. Not a soul. The enemy was gone. After a while, we came to the edge of a plantation. One of those forlorn, deserted homesteads, upgrown by now with brambles, ugly broken fences, and desolate with blank openings, where there once were doors and windows. Watch your step, Dan. You can't tell what might be in there.
Could be a trap.
No, I don't think so. We're not going to take any chances.
How long do you figure we've been out?
Well, not as long as it feels. We can't have come too far. We're still alive. Dan, look over there.
A little building?
What is it? Oh, what was it? Looks like a single room sitting on top of four high posts.
Yeah, about 10 feet off of the ground.
What do you say we take a look? Be a fine place to get a good peek at the country from all angles. And maybe find out the direction they took when they withdrew. Keep your rifle steady, just in case.
Hey, this little shack has certainly taken a beating.
It's hardly more than a roof on stilts.
Most of the flooring has fallen away.
The joists, the planks, just rotten away.
Looks as if the whole thing would go down at the touch of a finger.
If we move slowly, I think we can get to the top there without anything happening. I think it will bear our weight.
Careful now, Jerry.
Oh, here we go. Come on, give me a hand, Dan. There we are. You all right?
Fine. Here, take my field glasses.
That's quite a view from up. No. Dad, will you take a look at that?
Where?
That way. They can't be more than half a mile away. There must be thousands of them on that narrow road.
It's their rear guard covering their retreat. See how their gun barrels gleam in the morning sunlight?
They're heading south, towards that river. That could be the next stand.
Well, we better get back to our command as fast as we can and report what we found.
Oh, wait a minute. I was just thinking. That's a temptation, a real big temptation.
What are you talking about?
You remember Missionary Ridge?
I wasn't there.
The Confederate lines were extended all the way from the ridge, straight across the whole Chattanooga Valley, all the way to Lookout Mountain. Just the way they are down there.
Jerry, we've got to get back.
Long, great columns of Confederates slogging down the other side of that mountain road, almost exactly the way they're toiling up this one. And there was this heavy gun of theirs.
On top of the mountain?
It had been throwing charge after charge of grape at us. When we got to it, the cannon was still hot. Ammunition, right behind it.
Jerry, that's all very well, but...
I looked into that round, brazen ring of its muzzle, and I knew what I had to do. One last parting shot at them. A peck of iron from their own gun as they swarmed down the mountainside like so many ants.
And did you?
Just as I'm about to do right now. Oh, you should have seen them scatter. Doesn't the sight of those Rebs tempt you, Danny?
To do what?
All I have to do is take this beautiful Springfield rifle of mine, put it to my shoulder like this.
Jerry, what are you doing?
With this old globe sight and this hair trigger, all I have to do is take careful aim, press the trigger ever so gently. Ever so gently.
Jerry, put that down. You'll have the whole enemy army down on the two of us.
Easiest thing in the world to send an ounce and a quarter of lead hissing right through into their...
Are you out of your mind, Jerry? Put that gun down.
It's the business of a soldier to kill.
Not now, Jerry. We've got to get back.
It also becomes a soldier's habit to kill.
What is the matter with you, Jerry?
Just one little shot.
Jerry, you have gone crazy.
One little shot.
Jerry, put down that gun.
I won't miss. I just draw back the hammer like this.
Jerry, don't do it.
I set the trigger... Aim into the sight carefully, like this. And I bring my finger ever so slowly to the hair trigger, and...
I am the resurrection and the life, saith the Lord. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live.
What's happened? I can't open my eyes. Whose voice is that? Sounds like my commanding officer.
And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. I know that my Redeemer lives.
Those are the words of the burial service. Who are they burying?
And though his body be destroyed, yet shall I see God.
That huge explosion. That's it. An enemy shell must have hit the frame of the shed Ransom and I was standing on, just as I was about to pull the trigger of my rifle.
The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. May the Lord receive the soul of Jerome Searing.
They're burying me.
Amen.
No. It can't be. No. It must not be.
Someone once called life a means to an end. An end that, sooner or later, catches up with all of us. Someone else compared life to a cup of tea. The more deeply we drink of it, the more quickly we reach the dregs. For Private Jerome Searing, the question has become, is the cup still full? Is he still alive? Or by an accident of fate, has he been forced to drain the cup to the very bottom? I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Hi, this is Tony Orlando.
And Dawn. Thelma and Joyce.
Talking to the...
Tony Orlando and Dawn are talking to people who have found bright new careers by going to technical school. Tony?
I'd like to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Mark Beveridge. Mark, what were your plans when you left high school?
I didn't have any plans.
Mark had no skills and did dead-end laboring work until he spent 2 years in a technical school.
And what do you
and
do?
And prison.
I work in a research lab building lasers.
If you don't like the work you do, learn to do the work you like. Get a free Tony Orlando record. You can be more than you are. And the facts on how you can learn to do the work you like at technical school. Write Careers, Box 111, Washington, D.C., 20044.
Technical school seems like a good idea for a young man, Mark.
Yes, it sure was for me.
This was a public service announcement of this station, the U.S. Office of Education, and the Advertising Council.
You're listening to Erie House Radio. Oh, I gotta have me some blues.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good story building up.
It is the everlasting fear of being buried, but are you buried alive? That is a fear that a lot of people have, and through literature as well.
I think it's because medicine not having been advanced back in the day, quite possible someone in a catatonic state or something could have been buried prematurely.
Buried, exactly. It does tickle the spine, to say nothing of the fact that the fog of war put in the mix. Dear Ambrose Bierce, speaking of this being the missing, he was a famously missing person. He went down to Mexico and never came back.
Mm-hmm. Must have been the right cantina. That was it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. One never knows.
Yes, indeed. Mr. Arnold Moss, who is also, you said, the writer, or rather the adapter of Ambrose Bierce's story. Wonderful actor. Very aristocratic bearing, albeit he had the same sort of, I think we mentioned this previously in a show, same sort of bearing that Jonathan Harrison, so urbane speak, yet he was not British, not upper crust in any regard, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, I think the gent was... Oh, yeah, he was from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. Hey, Brooklyn. Brooklyn Dodgers. Dodgers. The Dodgers.
I think a lot of the guys who came out succeeding out of Brooklyn, so was Jonathan Harris. And yet you'd never mm-hmm. know. Oh, he hated his Brooklynese accent and worked very, very hard to kill it. And he did.
However, our Mr. Moss made himself extremely well-educated sort of fellow, a Phi Beta Kappa, a master's degree in French, en français, and earned a PhD in theater. Aren't we much?
Yep, and I think it was co-written, this adaptation by, I'm guessing it's his wife, Stella Moss. They're crediting Arnold and Stella as writing for this.
Hey, Stella!
This show ran for the first time, as we mentioned, on January 1st of 1976, but was repeated January 4th the same year, and again November 4th of 79. And it is show number 406. It was the first show of 1976.
Well, to quote Mae West, too much of a good thing is wonderful, and this is a wonderful show.
Yeah, if it wasn't for me, it'd be perfect. So glad you could join me here as Gar is preparing for Horrible Horror right after this show at
on
8
the Twitch.
Eastern. Yep, on their Twitches. And who knows, we're moving at a fairly good clip here, so maybe we'll have some bonus radio for you at the end. As we
Nicely done.
Yep.
Nicely done. Yes, and Dave is on a secret mission. Remember, Dave, the password is Anna Banana Afrobamine blah, blah, blah. Don't forget.
The password is... Oh, wait, wrong game show. no, it's that not-so-secret mission. He is actually in support of one of his cast members who's doing some stand-up comedy tonight near Dave's area. So Dave couldn't help but root on and be in support of his friend, whose name he mentioned yesterday, and I'm kicking myself because I don't remember what it was. But if you're a friend of Dave's, you're a friend of ours, and break a leg, as they say.
Absolutely. Compound fracture. There you go.
Oh, gee. Well, any more good luck than that, and hey, it's off to the hospital for a little traction. Hey. Let's continue now with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, One of the Missing. Am I dead or am I not dead? Find out. Whoa.
when that day comes, as it must to all men, when we have drawn our last breath, will there be some signal, some way of knowing that the end indeed has come? Or do we, as Jerome Searing may be doing, settle for the idea that our whole life is a kind of dream within a dream, from which we are awakened by death itself?
I finally managed to open my eyes. I saw a patch of gray sky rising from a fringe on top of the trees. In the foreground, there was a crazy crisscross pattern of heavy, black, straight lines that blacked out part of the sky. I felt drained, exhausted. Once more, I shut my eyes. I heard what seemed to be the rhythmic breaking of waves upon a beach. Over it, I could hear a familiar voice, repeating over and over again,
"Jerome Searing. Jerome Searing. You are caught. Caught like a rat in a trap. A rat in a trap. A rat in a trap."
And then I heard something else. What's that? Who is that? Who is it? Walking there above my head.
It's me, Jerry.
Marion.
Your wife, Jerry.
Why are you here?
I came to mourn at your grave.
My grave?
To add my weight and the weight of our child to the weight of the earth upon your breast.
Why are you saying these things, Marion?
Why did you throw your life away?
I've done no such thing.
The brave Private Jerome Searing. Young, handsome, intelligent. A good father, a good husband. Those are the things you were, Jerry. Now you're a hero. A dead hero.
I don't believe you.
You don't want to believe me. Open your eyes. Wide. If you can, Jerry. What do you see?
Nothing. Everything's become black. And outside of your voice up there, I hear nothing.
Then admit it, Jerry.
Admit what?
The simple fact that you are dead. That you are buried. That I am up here, your widow, kneeling now in sorrow on your grave.
I tried to open my eyes a second time. I took a deep breath, but breathing was difficult. Everything about me was so still. And then it all came back. The shack. The retreating enemy troops, my sighting the rifle. The explosion of the Confederate artillery. And I remembered Danny. Dan? Danny! Where are you, Danny? Where are you? Are you here?
Jerry. Are you all right?
I can't see you, Dan. Where are you?
I can see you just about. I'm over here, not more than 10 feet from you.
I hear your voice. My eyes are open, but I can't see you. I can't move. Can you, Danny?
I don't know. Very little. Maybe just enough to... What's wrong, Jerry?
I'm lying here flat on my back. But on an angle. My head's a little higher than my feet. My back is supported by some kind of solid wooden beam.
You can't move at all.
Not an inch. There's another tremendous piece of timber lying right on my chest, much too heavy to move. And there's a kind of brace that joins at right angles that has me wedged against a pile of boards on my left. Can't move my left arm at all.
How about your legs?
They're straight out, I think. I've no feeling in them. My head feels as if it were being held in some kind of tight vice. I can move my eyes and my chin, but that's all. How about you, Dan?
Not quite that bad, I guess. Even if I could move, this whole mess might come down on us and make things worse than they are. The slightest move.
Yeah, you may be right, Dan.
But if we don't take that chance, we could be here forever. And nobody... would ever know.
Dan, I can move the fingers of my right hand.
Anything else?
No, nothing else.
I'm going to try to move, Jerry. I've got a little support here in my back. I may be able to loosen my right leg.
Be careful, Dan.
I might just be able to push myself.
Watch it, Danny.
There. I got my hand free. Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Jerry.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. You?
Well, the dirt and the rubble are up to my chin now.
Well, one thing is for sure. We can't just lie here like a couple of corpses. We've got to get out and report to headquarters.
What'd you just say, Dan?
They'll be expecting us. Headquarters will be waiting for us.
No. No, before that. You said we can't just lie here like a couple of corpses.
Well, can we? Answer me, Jerry. Can we?
As I tried to find an answer to Danny's question, once more I heard the voice of my wife, Marion. We were both standing at the mouth of Dead Man's Cave. It seemed like 1,000 years ago.
Oh, we finally made it, Jerry.
Dead Man's Cave. What a climb.
I was sure once we made it past Ghost Rock, the rest would be easy.
Now, as soon as we catch our breath, we'll have a look inside, and we're going to find out why they say it's haunted.
Let's rest a little first. Oh, Jerry, darling. You know there's going to be a war.
It looks that way.
Promise me one thing.
If I can.
Wait until your time comes. Don't volunteer. Let's have as much time together as we can before you feel you have to go.
I can't promise that.
Why not? Oh, please, Jerry.
Because I've already volunteered yesterday.
Oh, Jerry, you don't have the remotest idea of the meaning of the word fear, do you? Jerry! Those shots are coming from inside Dead Man's Cave.
Who's in there? Whoever you are, come out of there. I'm going in to see.
Wait, Jerry. Look up at the mouth of the cave.
What is that? A huge ring of black metal is forming a circle around the entrance.
Let's get out of here.
It's like looking into the muzzle of a giant rifle. Who are you in there? Answer me. You answer me.
Private Jerome Searing, you are caught. Caught. Like a rat in a trap. Like a rat in a trap. Trap, 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 trap.
Found myself staring into two beady red little eyes. They came closer and closer. They became larger and larger. I was staring into the eyes of an oversized rat that must have lived in the shed where we were standing on before it collapsed. Get away. You've no business here. The creature scampered away.
We're alive, all right. Why we should be, I hardly know, after practically the whole world fell down on us. We're alive, no question about it.
What makes you so sure?
Well, you hear me, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
The dead have no voices, Jerry. I'm alive, and you're alive. And we've got to find some way to get out of here. Are you in pain?
There may be something wrong with my right hand. There's a sharp, smarting pain there.
Can you move your fingers? Try to work them.
They feel wet and slippery. I can't see the hand, but I know the sensation. It's running blood. I must have ripped it on a piece of metal where the shed collapsed. How long do you think we've been in here, Dan?
I haven't any idea.
Seconds? Minutes? Possibly hours?
It couldn't have been too long. The dust is still settling. There's still dust in the air.
The way I'm held by these beams, I can't see.
Whatever we're going to do, Jerry, we'd better get some rest first. We'll need every ounce of strength we've got.
That's a good idea, Dan.
Some of our boys are sure to stray out here. Either foraging or maybe even looking for us.
Yes, yes, of course. And they'll find us, too. Somebody will surely find us.
Private Searing, I'm glad I found you.
Yes, sir.
What took you so long?
Well, sir, just as we were about to return to headquarters...
Yes?
There was this explosion...
Everything collapsed, sir.
And that's the sum total of your intelligence report?
No, sir. The enemy has started to retreat. They're moving southeast toward the river. There must be at least 2,000 of them. I should judge they began their retreat about 2 hours ago.
Fine work, Searing. Excellent. I'll see that you're properly rewarded. Your country will be very proud of you.
Yes, thank you, sir. And now, would it be possible to get us out of here? We can't stay here like this forever.
You won't have to, Searing.
Thank you, sir.
Sooner or later, you'll be taken out.
Sooner or later?
There's nothing we can do at this moment, Private. Too many other things to do. Priorities.
You mean you're going to let me stay here?
Sorry, Private Searing. There's a war going on. Too many other things to do. Too many other things.
You leave me here, and I'm as good as dead. As good as dead. Dead. As good as dead.
Jerry, wake up. Wake up. What's wrong?
I must have been dreaming. How long was I asleep?
I no idea. I dozed off a bit, too.
Oh, if I could only get this right hand free. Then I could try to get this piece of timber off my chest. Oh, but there's not a chance.
Jerry, I think some of this junk has moved. It begins to look as though I might have the faintest chance of getting some of this stuff off of me. Can you move at all, Jerry?
No, not as much as a hair. Except for the fingers of my right hand. Dan?
Yeah?
The strangest thing. I couldn't see it before, but now that the sun has risen, everything's a whole lot clearer.
What are you talking about? But
there's something inches away from my forehead. Pointed right at it.
What kind of thing?
I'm not sure. It's something like a ring of black shining metal. Right in front of my eyes.
How big can you see?
It's so close, it's hard to tell. I think I know what it is, Danny. It's my rifle.
What?
It's the muzzle of my rifle. The barrel's being held in place by the debris and rubbish. The gun is still cocked, just as it was when I was about to fire it. The slightest movement, the slightest touch on the trigger will set it off. And it's aimed at the exact center of my forehead.
Do you remember the story of the ancient Greek Damocles, who was invited to a sumptuous banquet? As he dined, without a care in the world, he happened to look up above his head to discover a sharp-edged sword dangling by a single hair directly over his head. His host had placed it there to impress Damocles with the dangerous nature of life itself. Private Jerome Searing finds that his life is hanging by the same sort of fragile thread. The outcome? I'll return shortly with Act 3.
In case you've forgotten how much fun driving can be, Buick would like to introduce you to Skylark, a small car that's all Buick, with room, comfort, and an engine that no other compact car in America offers, the incredible Buick V6. Skylark, it's free spirit made practical.
People's year-end double issue is here with the 25 most intriguing people of the year. From Betty Ford to Dolly Parton, from Woody to Cher, Patty Hearst to Jerry Brown. They're all here in this special double issue of People, the winners and losers of 75, and people to watch for in 76. Jacqueline Streisand, Katharine Hepburn, and Audrey II, Doris Day and Rudolf Nureyev, plus a squad of Olympic hopefuls and a line of first ladies in waiting. It's the biggest, most exciting issue of People ever. Pick up a copy today.
That goes bump, bump. And sometimes I can hear it thump. And Daddy says that in my chest, I have two things that are the best. They call them lungs, for breathing air. You never see them, but they're there. And if I breathe in air that's clean, I'll grow up like a jumping bean. Whenever I see any smoke, I'll run away before I choke. And something even better yet, I'll never smoke a cigarette. I'll breathe the air that's clean and free. so I can keep on being me.
Clear the smoke from your family image and from your lungs. And remember, your kids may never start if you stop. Quitting is tough, but your lung association says it's a matter of life and breath.
As we...
3.5 years old.
That kid was too cute, man. That kid was too cute. But anyway, the story's getting kind of cute, too, in a way.
I am intrigued. Can't figure out, are they, is it a dream? Are they really in the hereafter? Or are they somewhere in limbo in between?
Yep. Who knows? Or maybe they're already dead.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Don't know. We don't know. Yes, in the chat room, good old Bob and Fogbane, I was making mention of the fact that Mason Adams, such a rich, distinctive voice as well, very familiar, did tons of commercials.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, I remember him. And here, through my association with Dave and doing all this fun stuff here on Erie House, we've gotten to hear him on quite a few programs. So he started maybe in the late 40s, early 50s.
I think he did, actually. He did. And, getting back to the Mr. Arnold Moss, I'm sure Trek fans would know him as Kodos the Executioner from the Shakespearean title original Star Trek series episode, ooh, Conscience of the King.
Yep, and Mason Adams was known for playing Pepper Young on a popular radio soap opera, Pepper Young's Family, throughout the 1940s and 50s. So, yeah, he started in the 40s, heard on most successful radio programs during radio's golden age, and heard frequently on Hyman Brown's CBS Radio Mystery Theater. No kidding.
Oh, and don't forget he was the crusty yet lovable, not totally crusty, but yet lovable, editor on the series Lou Grant.
Yep. Also in a TV miniseries called From Earth to the Moon. I guess it's out of Britain, I think, in 1998. TV show, he was a regular named Sidney Pomerantz in the TV show Murder One, Diary of a Serial Killer. It was a TV miniseries. The Marshal of Johnny Whitaker. Really? They court-martialed the kid from Family Affair. How about that?
Oh, right.
Johnson Whitaker. Oh. Johnson Whitaker.
Johnson's
say, that's different.
Yeah. Oh, and a bit of trivia. Mason Adams acted on at least one episode of NBC's X-1 radio program in the 50s.
Yes.
So he was there a lot. And another New Yorker from Brooklyn, no less.
Yep. Quite a bit of TV, too.
Were they cloning?
The Man Behind the Badge, Armstrong Circle Theater, Phil Silver Show. He's in the movie The Happy Hooker. Okay. He was the banker with Chris. Whatever. Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Oh,
that's a, that, now, that's a little different side of the movie world.
He's
Willie the Wino in Murder Can Hurt You. And on and on and on. A long, lengthy career.
To be sure. And, again, I think they were cloning people in Brooklyn at the time. I mean, I wonder what his original accent was. It's a Dodgers, the Dodgers, the Dodgers. Probably sounded like one of the dead-end kids. Jonathan Harris, Arnold Moss, Mason Adams, they all sounded like dead-end kids. The mood, refined, renewed, reflected.
Repressed. Oh, no, wait, no.
Repressed. Oh. Alrighty.
Well, I hope you guys are enjoying our show tonight. We certainly are. And
definitely.
Let's let's kind of wrap it up. We'll have time to squeeze in some fun bonus material as we conclude with One of the Missing. Daddy scared.
Ambrose Bierce, the author of One of the Missing, cynically defined man as an animal so lost in contemplation of what he thinks he is that he tends to overlook what he really ought to be. And among man's chief occupations, he added, is the extermination of other animals, his own species included. With his loaded rifle pointed at his head, unable to move, and having lost all sense of the passing of time, Private Jerome Searing's chief occupation is to find some way of preventing his accidental extermination by his own hand.
Jerry, are you awake?
Yeah, I'm awake.
You all right?
The barrel of my rifle seems to be closer to my head than it was before. I can't breathe for fear of setting it off. I'm afraid to move.
How's your hand?
It's still losing blood. It's begun to throb, a slow, regular pulsation, each one sharper than the one before.
Now that we've rested a bit, we'll figure something out.
Dan.
What is it?
That rat that was here before. It's come back again.
It won't harm you, I'm sure.
It's slowly making its way up the wooden stock of the rifle. Its eyes are looking straight into mine as it moves forward. Now it's sniffing around the hair trigger. Dan, what do I do?
Just keep still. Don't move.
If its nose or tail so much as touches the trigger, I'm not afraid to die, Dan. But not this way. Not like this.
He was not afraid to live dangerously. He was not afraid to die.
What was I hearing? Where was that voice coming from?
Private Jerome Searing, cut off from his fellows by an accident of destiny, did not fear to yield to the ultimate act of courage that brought him to his fatal end.
Those words made no sense. I was not dead. Yet, I was still very much alive. And all the time I listened to the drone of that voice, I kept my eyes glued onto that loathsome little animal that was sniffing its slow way up along the rifle stock. A flick of its tail, and I'd be gone. Then suddenly it stopped, turned around, scampered off. With the free fingers of my torn and bleeding hand, moving nothing else but my eyes, I groped for whatever might be in reach. Dan, something's happened.
What is it?
My fingers have touched a strip of board, a building lath of some kind. I can just barely touch it.
Where is it, Jerry?
Right alongside my body. I can just bend my elbow as much as an inch. I think I might be able to get hold of it with the tips of my fingers.
Well, if you can do that.
Then I might be able to work it upward. That's to say backward, toward me. Far enough to lift the end of it and try to push the rifle away from my head.
Try, Jerry. You've got to try.
If the worst happens, and I can't push the gun away, if it's wedged too tightly into the ground, I can always try to touch the strip of board to the trigger itself.
What kind of solution is that?
It may be the only one that's left, Danny. My fingers reached out for the length of wood. Slowly, the real world began to come into focus once again. Here in this confusion of timber and boards, this was the sole universe. The only thing that was. Here was immortality in time. Forever and ever.
Jerry, something's happened over here.
Huh.
If I'm very careful, I think I may be able to loosen some more of this stuff around me. I'm going to push down with my hands, very gently, against the ground, and come out backward. I hope.
A stone, a pebble, a clump of earth dropped against this trigger would be the end of me. Maybe of both of us.
I know that, Jerry. I'll be as careful as I can.
Wait a minute. If by some miracle you can get out of this mess without sending a bullet through the middle of my head, you leave me here just as I am while you hurry back to headquarters, is that it?
I didn't say that.
Not in so many words. Then you delivered to the captain the intelligence report of the enemy movements that you observed, that you discovered. And you, Private Ransom, great hero that you are promoted in the field and become Lieutenant Ransom. Is that it, Danny?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Meantime, poor unfortunate Private Searing lies buried under this pile of garbage with the inside of his head scattered all over the place. Too bad. Just one of the missing...
If any of what you're saying were true, Jerry, just exactly what could you do to prevent it?
At the moment, not a blessed thing. I suppose if this rifle of mine should go off while you're getting out of here, you might call it an accident of fate, wouldn't you?
What would you call it, Private Searing?
I would call it plain and simple murder. For a moment in time, there was nothing. I must have blacked out. Soon I found myself trembling in every fiber of my body, drenched in my own sweat. Dan? Danny? There was no answer. Of course, Danny had managed to escape. Well, hadn't he? Then a terrifying thought gripped my mind. Who was I calling? Danny? Danny Ransom? In a flash of clarity, it came to me. I had never in my life even known a Danny Ransom. How could he answer me? There is no Danny. There never was a Danny. Danny was a creation of my own fevered imagination. From the very beginning, I was sent out on this mission alone.
Now spent two whole days in search of Private Searing. We've not been able to find a single trace of him.
I'm here, Captain. Right here. Practically under your nose.
Having done everything within our power to find him or his body with no success, I feel that we would be justified in calling off the search.
You can't do that. I'll die if you leave me, and you're so close.
We'll return to quarters. Howard! Hope!
Dan! Danny! No. I'd forgotten. There's no Danny. But if he had never existed, at least Marion did. My wife was no invention. If I could only be with her, this whole nightmare would go away.
Who are you?
Marion, it's me, Jerry. I've come home from the war.
You've changed, so? I didn't recognize you. Is the war ended?
For me, it is.
Why have you come here?
This is my home. You're my wife.
Why have you come?
Take me back, Marion. Let me come home.
I cannot. Too many things have changed. You'll have to excuse me now. It's begun to rain.
Don't leave me.
I have so many things to do. Please don't try to stop me. I'm due somewhere. Somewhere very important.
Where do you have to go?
This bouquet of flowers. Very important. Goodbye, Jerome.
I'm going to go with you, wherever it is.
If you like, Jerome. If you like.
Where are we, Marion?
Don't you recognize the place? It's the old burial ground, next to the church. Would you like to stand under my umbrella? The rain is coming down harder.
No, no, I'm fine the way I am.
In recognition of his devotion to his country above and beyond the call of duty.
What's he doing here? He's no reason.
Shh, quiet, Jerome. The captain is speaking.
It is my honor and privilege on this solemn occasion to bestow upon his widow, Marion, his country's acknowledgement of its gratitude in the form of this Medal of Honor awarded posthumously. Mrs. Searing, will you kindly step forward?
Stop, Marion. Stop what you're doing. All of you. There's been a mistake. A huge mistake. I was alone again, buried in the rubble. Alone. Except maybe for the rats. The fingers of my torn hand reach out for the strip of wood I had discovered. But somewhere the piece of wood met some kind of an obstruction. I was not able to touch the trigger. The black mouth of that rifle is still growing sharper and sharper. I can already feel the track of the bullet burning its way into my head. 6 o'clock? Morning? Evening? What difference does it make? Oh, come on, hand, do something. Get that stick to touch off the trigger of the rifle. Good, hand, good. Now touch the trigger. Stick. Touch it. What happened? I set the trigger off, but there's been no shot.
Sergeant?
Sir?
The squad ready?
Yes, Captain.
This will be our final attempt to locate Private Searing. Alive, if he's still alive, or dead.
I understand, sir.
Now, let me see now. It's exactly 1 minute past 6 a.m. Note that, won't you, for the report? And the date is...
6th of July, Captain.
6th of July. I sent him out on the 30th. He's been gone a week.
Well, the chances of finding him alive.
Now, what was that? Look through your field glasses, Sergeant. Over in that direction. Now, what do you see?
That old shack we've had under observation. The dust is still rising. Must have just collapsed. That was the noise we heard.
Yeah, no shots. No explosion of any kind.
Seems to have fallen by itself. It's a complete wreck.
That's interesting. Well, while we're looking for Searing, we might take a quick look at it. Sergeant. Sergeant, will you come here, please? Look there.
Is that him?
I almost didn't recognize him. He's so covered with dust. I've seen a good many dead men. None ever with a face of that color.
Cheeks have fallen in, the temples are sunken.
Look at the mouth, the upper lip pulled back, showing his clenched teeth.
Give me a hand here. Let's try to get him out.
Here we go. Yeah, that was easier than I thought it would be. The body, outside of the right hand, seems to be in excellent shape.
No bones appear to be broken.
Help me turn him over.
Yep. Yep.
Not a sign of any kind of a gun wound any place on the body. Do you see any?
No, sir, none at all.
There's his rifle. May I have it, please?
Thank you.
It's strange.
What's that, Captain?
There's no shell in the chamber of the rifle. Not even a spent one. Searing's gun was not loaded. That's peculiar.
Very strange. Such a good soldier. What would you suppose was the cause of death?
It's hard to say. Maybe simple starvation or thirst or a combination of both. After all, he's been dead a week. What time do you have, Sergeant?
6:18, sir.
Remember that for the report.
Yes, sir.
And have your men carry the body back to camp. We'll give this soldier a burial befitting one of the bravest men our country will ever know.
My first excitement, good soldier that I was supposed to be. I did forget to load my rifle. I remember that now. So my fears as I lay there in the rubble with the gun pointed at my head were groundless. But you're wrong, Captain, about everything else. I have not been dead a week, Captain. I have been dead just a bare 18 minutes. You should have noticed that my body is still warm, and I did not die of starvation or of thirst. This brave soldier, this formidable warrior, died as much as he did from anything else, of fear. The fear of dying.
We know that the feeling of love and the feeling of hatred are very often confused. That the line that separates our feelings of love and hatred can be a very thin one. By the same token, the distinction between fear and courage can be equally narrow. When we think a person is motivated by the noblest kind of courage and bravery, it might just be possible that the driving factor is nothing more than fear, as in the case of Private Jerome Searing. I'll be back shortly.
First, the good news about the treatment of cancer. Through chemotherapy, which is the use of anti-cancer drugs to lessen pain and lengthen life for many, great progress has been made. Through chemotherapy, a child with leukemia, a woman with breast cancer, a senior citizen with a tumor, can bring a normal balance to their daily lives. Now the bad news. More research is desperately needed to find newer, even more effective anti-cancer drugs, and more programs to bring those treatments to everyone who needs help. You can be part of that research. You can be part of that help. Send a check today to the Chemotherapy Foundation. That's Chemo, C-H-E-M-O, Therapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. That's the Chemotherapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. This is Bess Meyerson with a public service message from the Chemotherapy Foundation.
An interesting footnote. Ambrose Bierce, author of this story, volunteered as a private in the Indiana Infantry at the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861. He served for the entire duration of the war, was twice wounded, once in the heel, and once more severely in the head. This occurred in the same battle of Kennesaw Mountain, which was the setting of our tale. I wonder if Bierce's head wound could have had anything to do with Jerome Searing's difficulties. Our cast included Christopher Tabori, Jennifer Harmon, Arnold Moss, and Mason Adams. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Meg, I've got to resolve this puzzle. Will you help me?
Of course, Terry.
Then try to get to the library tomorrow and look at back issues of London newspapers or periodicals for 1810. Find out if there was a Lord Millbrook and a Lady Sybil. Did he have a friend named Seward? Was a man, a vagrant, convicted for the woman's murder? Will you do that for me?
Certainly, darling.
Really research it, Meg. As Ben pointed out, cases at law are decided by evidence. I don't have any. All I've got is a picture in my mind of a murder and of an innocent man being hanged for the crime. It's a very long time ago. But the same crime has been repeated. If there's any substance to what I've seen in my mind's eye, I'm going to defend the man now being accused of murder.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Ooh, ah. Oh, Dave picked us a good one.
Oh, Dave.
And who knows? He could be lurking about.
Ooh.
Spirit of Dave. Spirit of Dave. Can you?
Dave.
Hey, we're here outside Wild Oscars at the Civic.
Beanie, beanie, chili beanie. The spirits are about to speak.
Whoa, that Ouija board does work. Whoa.
So did you have a moral for this one? Because there is a moral for this story.
Why, I was hoping you did.
Well, I do have one.
Good save.
By them.
Eerie House Radio, proudly sense, a wisely planned moral of the story.
Apologies to Gar. Never send a schizophrenic to do a spy's job. There you go.
Did I hear they are making a part two?
That's what Gar was saying. Tim Burton is putting together a part two of Mars Attacks.
I don't know how they're going to do that. Jesus, no.
instead of Whitman, they'll have Richard Harris's MacArthur's Park scene.
There you go.
Get rid of the aliens.
Talk about a bad scene.
Am I left decaying out in the rain?
Your voice box in the rain.
I did want to call in and catch that great ending to the wonderful Ambrose Bierce story, because the cameras are all set up, ready to roll, and we have now just reached our fifth and sixth person who arrived so far. So, woohoo! Big show, big show. You know, Wild Oscars at the Civic. So we shall see. We shall see. And of course, people always come late because they have to be bashable. But anyway.
And what's the name of the gentleman whose show you're catching?
It is Jay Bach. He's one of my cast members. Yeah, occasional cast members. And he was a professional stuntman at one point until his body said it's time to give it up. And then came in with some kind of insurance adjuster of certain things. He was an evaluator of certain types of things that not many people did. And then he got the opportunity to go into some stand-up. And he's been doing stand-up for quite a few years. He even did a tour for a while. So that's who we've got on tap for tonight. Occasionally he comes out of his cave to do some stand-up. So
cool.
All right.
Well, enjoy.
The material ages as we do. It goes from dating and girlfriends to wives to ex-wives to children to grandchildren. So that's what happens as we get older. So does our material. But for me, I've always had very old jokes, so I've always been ready for being old.
There you go.
So anyway, CW, great to hear you. Dale, great to see you as always. And I'm going to turn it back over to you guys. So have a, I know you had a great show. You're going to have a great finish, and I'll see you next Friday.
It's a date, big guy. We will see you next Friday on the radio. And again, to his friend Jay, break that leg, triple fracture, and good luck.
Outstanding. Yep, and don't forget to tell us when we can sign the cast.
Now, that was one thing we didn't get to ask you yesterday, CW. Have you ever been in a situation of feeling trapped, be it like in a room, in a tight area, in a refrigerator, or anything?
Well, let's see. Happily, I don't have claustrophobia, so I'm all right in that score. But as for being trapped, yes. When I was taking algebra test, that felt absolutely encasing. Nowhere
That's
to go.
That's always a trap.
Perspiring, thinking, how do I get out of this? How do I deal with this? There has to be a way out. There has to be a way out. The window? No, that won't help. No, the door? No, that's closed, and the teacher's blocking it. Could I faint and flail on the floor? No, could I evaporate? Why is an X2 plus 3D in front of me? Yes, so I'll have to say yes.
Yes, 42. The answer is always 42.
No, thank you.
I saw something on Facebook I think all here will appreciate, okay? Someone had these action, little, I don't want to say action figures, but little plastic, like, you know, you've seen plastic soldiers. Well, these were like knights. And they broke the arms and legs off of one.
Oh, no. Are we talking Monty Python here?
Yes. That was obviously a reference to Monty Python. I thought that was cute.
Oh, God. It's
come
all
back,
right.
I'll
just
bite
flesh
you
wound. Death. It's only a flesh wound. It's nothing. Come back here.
That's right. It's only a flesh wound. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
With scads and scads of time, we wouldn't be out of line, I think, to have a little Wheel-O-Radio.
Oh, if I may, I can make my way and do my semi-imitation of kind of sort of Vanna spinning a letter. I'll spin the wheel, and a one, and a two, and a spin that wheel.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
The Bickersons have retired. Mrs. Bickerson lies rigid but awake in the darkness as poor husband John, victim of an obscure type of insomnia that prevents other people from sleeping, exhibits the telltale symptoms of his dread affliction. Listen.
It may be funny to him, but it's not to me. John, John, cut it out.
Cut it out, Blanche.
I'll lose my mind if you don't stop that giggling. What's the matter with you?
What's the matter, Blanche?
You sound like a tickled schoolgirl. What are you dreaming of?
Tickling schoolgirls.
John.
What? What? What'd you say, Blanche?
I simply won't stand it another night. Living in this house is becoming unbearable.
Let's move.
John, I swear I'm at my wit's end. How long do you think a person can go without sleep?
I've been doing it for 5 years.
John Bickerson, we've been married for 5 years.
Amazing coincidence. Good night.
Don't you good night me, you big sleeping pill. Why don't you have some consideration for me?
Well, what do you want me to do, Blanche?
When you were sick last year, did I say that? Didn't I sit up all hours of the night nursing you? Didn't I?
Yes, you did.
And what was my reward?
I got sicker.
Sure, you can afford to be sarcastic now. You feel fine.
I want to sleep. It's 2 o'clock, Blanche.
You don't remember how I catered to you every minute. When the doctor said not to let you have anything cold, didn't I give you all the ice water you wanted?
You sure did. Almost killed me.
That's gratitude. Well, I didn't expect anything else from you. You don't love me, do you, John?
Oh, of course I do. Just because I don't say it every 5 minutes doesn't mean that I don't love you.
Tell the truth, John. If anything happened to me, would you marry again?
Never. Never again.
Well, you don't have to sound so vehement.
Well, if I said it any softer, you'd say I didn't sound convincing. I don't know, Blanche. I just wish you'd let me sleep.
I keep thinking how nice it was before we were married.
Mm-hmm.
You were so different then. You used to plead with me for a little kiss. Now you don't even think of it. Why?
A mouse in a trap loses his taste for cheese.
Very funny. Oh, you're so funny, John Bickerson.
Well, I'm tired, and I have to get up early tomorrow.
You just won't understand, will you? There are none so blind as those who will not see.
Yeah?
The one time I expected you to break down and offer me comfort, and you fail me.
What?
It's all right. I'll struggle through it alone. It won't be long, and when the time arrives, I don't even want to see you near me.
What are you talking about?
I'll go to the hospital by myself. You can sleep right through it.
Blanche! Blanche, are you...
Hasn't Dr. Marvin told you, John?
Nobody told me. What is it?
I'm going to have my tonsils out.
Your tonsils? What do you need to have your tonsils out for? You never have sore throats. Your tonsils never bothered you before. You never even knew you had tonsils.
Dr. Marvin said it would help my disposition.
Have them out, by all means.
I don't think I will, after all.
Okay, don't. Good night.
The only reason I was going to do it is because I thought I'd get a good night's sleep.
Okay, do it.
Why should I suffer through an operation? You're the one who keeps me awake. Why don't you do it?
Do what?
Have your tonsils out.
Okay, I'll have them out next week.
You say it, but you won't do it. Have them out now.
What?
Go on, get up and call Dr. Marvin. Let him pull your tonsils out.
Blanche, are you insane? It's 2:30 in the morning.
The hospital stays open all night. Go on, let him pull your tonsils out.
I haven't got any tonsils. I had them out when I was 9.
Well, you need some new ones by now. Let him put some in.
Oh, this is awful. You're deliberately trying to keep me awake. You know I have to get up early and go to work.
Oh, don't make your job sound so important. You take a day off, nothing will happen.
No, nothing will happen except I lose a day's pay. I need all the money I can get. I've got to make a payment on the car tomorrow.
Where will you get that?
I've got it. There's $84 locked in the desk drawer.
60.
84. I looked yesterday.
You didn't look today. There's only 60.
What happened to the other $24?
Don't look at me, John.
Blanche, there are only two people who have a key to that drawer. You and I, and there's $24 missing.
Well, we'll each put back $12 and say no more about it.
How do you like that? Blanche, what did you do with that $24?
I spent it. I bought some perfume.
Perfume? $24 worth? How could you carry that much?
Don't be silly. It was only a half-ounce bottle, and I got it wholesale. It's the newest thing. Very daring. It's all perhaps.
Perhaps. For $24, they should give you positively. Can't understand why you throw my money away on junk like that.
It isn't junk, and you like it.
How do you know?
Because it's the same kind Gloria Gooseby uses.
I hate Gloria Gooseby.
Well, you're always sniffing around her.
Don't you start with that woman.
You're the one who started it.
I'd like to spend one night in this bedroom without Gloria Gooseby. Just one night.
She just douses herself with that perfume. That's how she catches all the men, the hussy.
She's not a hussy, and she doesn't need perfume to catch me. I mean, I can't stand the sight of Gloria Gooseby.
But you like the way she smells.
I hate the way she smells. I don't see how Leo can live with him. I wish they both dropped dead. Now, either let me go to sleep, or I won't go to work in the morning.
Don't go to work. See if I care. You'd have lost the day's pay anyway if I hadn't torn up that summons.
What summons?
For you to serve on a jury.
Well, you can't tear those things up. If I get a jury notice, I have to report.
Why?
Why? Because that's the law. You can't tear up any court order.
I tore up the traffic citation.
What traffic citation?
The traffic citation they gave me to go to court in front of the jury that you were supposed to serve on, but I tore up the notice.
Oh, Blanche, you'll have us both in jail.
Well, that's where my brother Amos is.
Amos? What has he got to do with this?
Well, I was taking a driving lesson.
Oh, Blanche, no. Not my new car. It's never been out of the garage.
Well, it's out now. I took a driving lesson and paid the instructor $5 an hour, and...
Who was the instructor? It was Amos, wasn't it? It was. I know it was Amos.
I never even took the wheel. Amos was driving, and we suddenly saw this other car careening toward us at 100 miles an hour.
Yes.
Amos didn't have much time, but by an amazing piece of quick thinking, he managed to meet him head on.
Oh.
The funny thing, nobody got hurt, not even the policeman.
What policeman?
In the other car.
Now look, Blanche.
Amos started to bawl them out about driving in the wrong lane, and they had some silly excuse about a police car having the right of way.
Blanche.
And then Amos got mad and hit one of the cops with a wrench.
Blanche, where is my car?
It's on Hill Street between 5th and 8th.
5th and 8th? That's 3 blocks apart.
That's where the car is. About 3 blocks apart. Or it was. They took some of it away to the police pound.
Some of it? But I don't care. I'm insured. I'm just happy they got that Amos in jail.
They can't do anything to him.
Oh, they can't, huh? That's reckless driving and resisting an officer. They can wrap him up good.
They can't do a thing about his driving, and you know it, John.
Why not?
Because he doesn't have a license.
Oh, that's different. They'll only add another 5 years. I hope they give him life.
John, why do you despise my poor brother so?
Because I hate him. And don't you dare ask me to help him, Blanche.
Well, the least you can do is help me. I have to go to court, too.
Well, it serves you right.
Go on, testify against me. Get me locked up in jail.
Oh, nobody's going to lock you up in jail.
Let them put me on bread and water. You won't feel so good when I walk that last mile when they slip my pants leg.
Blanche!
Why don't you get me a reprieve, John?
Oh, stop it! They're not going to do anything to you. Now go to sleep.
Go to sleep, he tells me. My poor brother's in jail. My own husband's going to testify against me. Go to sleep. How can I sleep? I'll never... How can he be so heartless?
Hello.
Where's the phone, Blanche?
I've got it. Hello?
Blanche, this is Amos. I'm still in jail.
Wait, Amos. I'll get John. Talk to him, John.
Sure. Hello.
Jocko?
Drop dead.
Oh, listen, you got to come down and spring me. This is the first call they let me make.
Drop dead.
Don't be sore, Jocko. I'm in an awful jam. I'm in a tank here with 50 other bums.
Drop dead.
But I got money enough to pay for all the damage. I think I even got enough for the bail bond. Get me out, will you, Jocko?
Drop dead.
I swear I'll pay you. I got plenty of dough. I started a crab game here and won over $400.
Dropped $400. Amos, are you loaded?
No, but the dice were. Hey, come down and spring me, will you, Jocko?
Well, I'm going to think about it, Amos. Right now, I'll leave you with two words.
Yeah, well, what's that?
Drop dead! Now I can sleep.
Please, John, dear, get my brother out of jail.
Well, I'll think about it.
I'll do anything for you, John. Please bail him out.
Pour me a shot of bourbon, Blanche.
Are you sure you wouldn't like a double shot, dear?
Just a single. Thanks. Ah, wonderful stuff.
I promise I'll never wake you up again, darling.
And will you forget all about Gloria Gooseby?
Forever. Just get Amos out of that nasty jail.
Well, we can't do anything about it until morning anyway. In the meantime, I think I'll get a good night's sleep.
Certainly, dear. Are you comfortable?
Perfect. Just perfect.
Snore to me, John.
That was the Bickersons.
That was classic. That was absolutely classic.
Yep, the epitome of familiarity breeds contempt.
Oh, yes.
And married couples with the Bickersons.
Marital bliss at its most blistering.
And as everybody knows, the live show on Friday has now moved up to 6:30. So Friday and Saturday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on Erie House. Well, don't forget, in about, 8 minutes, maybe a little less, it's Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul over on them Twitches. And we got time yet. I think maybe we could squeeze in a little bit of music.
A tune.
Sure, why not? I'll spring for it. Let me find the... Where did I put the jukebox? Ah, here it is.
Thank you.
radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
Gee, I didn't know we had that
many
listeners.
Thank you.
I didn't know we had that many listeners.
Wow.
Just 2.5 minutes away from Golden Goodness with Gar the Ghoul on Huddle Horror, starring Gar the Ghoul. And I got stuck. And we'll be back, what, next week, Friday at 6:30. Don't forget, 6:30, as midnight is past our bedtime. Midnight Stories. The Shadow, Nero Wolf, and Macabre. Okay, Macabre. That'll be on Friday night. And Saturday, it's Barry Craig and Johnny Dollar with more Midnight Stories. So we'll be in the dark.
Action-packed expense account.
Yes, the man himself. Oh, yep. So I was pleased. A couple co-workers have been tuning in and are enjoying the old-time radio show. If any of you are listening tonight, thank you so much. Appreciate your support. Hope you're enjoying the show. And, by the way, happy Easter weekend.
Oh, yes, indeed. Easter hunting, Easter eggs.
Yep.
Watch
so
out for the Easter bunny.
Oh, yeah. They're killer. And I expect Puppy to be up late. He went to the beauty parlor. And he's been racked ever since then. I guess it was stressful for him, the poor little guy. Oh, God.
Yeah. I know how I feel when I've had my mani-pedi done. It's just so stressful.
Well, he needed it. His fur was getting out of control, and his claws, he looked like Freddy Krueger dog. So fortunately, he got fixed up. We will see you next Friday at 6:30 Eastern. For me, CW, Dave and Gar, thanks for listening to Erie House Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Her and her.
When
her,
next
her.
We meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Ooh. Timing wasn't too bad on that.
Not at all.
Pardon me.
Well, this is show officially 603, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and as of a couple days ago, Dave said we hit 1,000 full radio programs. And
wow.
hundreds of clips. And we still no need to do repeats. However, if you're listening here in the archives, if you want repeats, let us know. I mean, there's some really, really good ones that might be worth another listen, but we have no need. There's just so much material out there. We can go on and on and on. So hopefully a little longevity to us oldsters so we can keep shoveling this stuff out.
Shoveling. Bulldozing. As archives are opened up all over the place and whatnot, and people clean out their attics and find those old reel-to-reels, I'm sure occasionally some lost show comes to light, and perchance, perhaps, per may, it'll come Dave's way and he can pop it on the show.
Yeah, you never know. We, of course, with respect to movies, there's a lot of them we'd like to see found. Classics like London After Midnight. Oh, gosh. I think people would go nuts if that were found.
They would lose their minds, seriously.
Can you imagine how you could commercialize a movie that's nearly 100 years old?
Well, they virtually did it. I mean, Metropolis was never totally lost, but when they revamped it because they found some lost scenes that they were able to incorporate it, and there is a really much better version of it that was totally cleaned up, really, really crisped up, just absolutely cleaned up. I think that's a version that it's still public domain, but it's kind of not public domain since they took it and cleaned it up and added stuff to it. But they did do a whole big presentation thing out in Hollywood a few years ago when they got it done. So, yeah, if there's an old thing of London After Midnight lying around in some dark, dank, dusty attic or basement, or I think they even – didn't they find some movie in a mental institution?
My family's home movies, but that's neither here nor there.
Alrighty.
Come on, that wasn't for the public, man.
Calm down, the inmates.
What was it? The Turner classic movies there are a ton, literally a ton of stills from London After Midnight, and they did a presentation, sort of a recreation. I think a short strip of the film was found, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And they pieced together stuff because the story itself is well known. In fact, Lugosi redid it in, 1935, forget the name of it. It's where he's talking at the, it could be for you or you. He points at the screen. Oh, what the heck's the name of that one? I'll find out. Wait a second. I'm an IMDb. We'll find it. That was a remake of London After Midnight. Let's get his filmography. I'll find it real fast. Mm-hmm. Got to get to the right year. 35. Mm. Mark of the Vampire. He was Count Mora.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah, because he's a detective. Is he a vampire? Is he not a vampire? What's going on?
I wouldn't have thought it would be so easy. I mean, they made tons and tons of prints, and prints were, just cast aside. I mean, even Spartacus had to be cleaned up before Kirk Douglas died. I think he still held the rights to it. Family probably holds the rights to it. But when they redigitized it and cleaned it up and everything, because Laurence Olivier had passed away, there was a snippet of sound and dialogue between Olivier and Tony Curtis's character.
Oh.
So they found, it just vanished. It just, something happened to it and it was just gone. It was considered a little too racy at the time. But they got Sir Anthony Hopkins to dub in the speech. They had the film clip, which they put back in. But the voice of Olivier was gone.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so when you see that again, that's in that small clip, that's Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Similarly with the classic Western, one of my favorites, and sometimes some to consider it to be one of the greatest Westerns of all time, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Okay, very long film. Sergio Leone's epic. It's close to a 3-hour movie, if I'm not mistaken.
In any event,
lost footage was found, I want to say, in the 90s. And it was just the Italian's version, unfortunately, but it it actually, it put together some things that hadn't really made sense to me as they were edited out in the American version. And there's just some pieces of the timeline of the story that just weren't, like, real clear. They could have been assumed, but it wasn't real clear that was sewed up with this lost footage. And here, all three of them, Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef, and Eli Wallach, were all alive, and they revoiced the missing, the found footage from Italy.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. But it made it a longer movie, so much longer. Maybe about 5 to 10 minutes longer, but still.
I don't know. That's a version I've seen. I mean, I've seen the movie many, many times, especially that music. You know, you can't forget that music.
Ennio Morricone is, I think, underappreciated. He scored not only that picture, but the preceding two spaghetti westerns that really put Eastwood on the map, A Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More. He actually did a great deal of the original The Thing with Kurt, not the original, the 80s The Thing with Kurt Russell, the original remake. The original remake.
Wow, the original remake. Good one. Yeah, I know Tarantino is a huge fan. He used I don't know if he used music akin to his, but in Django Unchained, the music has that same sort of flair.
Yeah. He also, I think Tarantino also liked the Bernard Herrmann stuff. He used, there's a British film, and it's almost like a British version of, oh, come on, what's that stinking film with Kubrick did with...
Clockwork Orange?
Yeah, it's almost like a Clockwork Orange, a British version of it, called Twisted Nerve. And he used that music from Twisted Nerve. It's the whistling of the nurse from Kill Bill. That was the theme of Twisted Nerve, a British film that about a disturbed young man that couldn't control his loins and was violent.
Oh, yeah.
Not as like spacey as Clockwork Orange, you know what I mean? Not as artsy, pop artsy, but it's a similar
dystopian
type of story. Yeah.
Kind of sci-fi dystopian almost.
Yes. If not sci-fi, certainly dystopian with we thought young kids were crazy then.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was actually, it was strange what your teachers will give you to read. Okay, children, here's a Clockwork Orange.
Let's give it to kindergartners. Why not?
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
That won't mess up their little heads.
Clockwork Orange. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Especially for the milk bar drink that was loaded with enough varieties of, shall we say, narcotics, and that's putting it mildly.
I like to say inebriants of various sorts.
Oh, yeah.
Inebriants. It sounds much more innocuous that way.
Yeah. Hey, Mom. Hey, Dad. You know what I found out?
Purple is a flavor. Yes. Maybe that's why kids do weird things with Kool-Aid. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. But with that said, I must be away. I'm glad I was able to kind of sort of pinch hit for Dave, and I'm glad Dave was able to chime in for just a moment to say how to do. And thanks for letting me again, as always, tag along on the wagon train.
Again, you're part of the Erie House family. That goes for listeners. Frogsbane, good old Bob. GGSI paper hasn't been around in a while. I'll have to drop them a line. They sent me this really nice book. That's kind of inspiring me, trying to get me back into hosting. It was a book about silent movie serials, because they had serials started in the silent era before they came to film and radio. And
that I did not know, but cool, nice. And even silent movies, proper silent movies, they did have a soundtrack to them. You know, you had a live orchestra or a pianist or an organist somewhere in the theater where people were watching the flickering screen.
Yep. Or they had a pit orchestra or an organist. It's like old-time radio.
There you are.
There you go. So I think you were about to introduce the great one.
Oh, yes. Without further ado, the one and only Mr. Jimmy, the Schnozola Duranto.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Maribo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
Thank you.